behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Boland.
And we're going to talk about a topic today that comes from a listener. His name is Mike Galinsky, and he's from New England. And he wrote in, I think it was near the end of October when he wrote in, and he said that he would like to hear a little bit about GT cars, or Grand Touring cars, because the GT label, as he says, has been put on a lot of different cars, but many are not true GT cars, and maybe kind of a history of what Grand Touring cars really are.
Oh, Mike, you've opened a dangerous door, my friend, because this reminds me of the debate over, you know, muscle cars or something. It comes down to some fairly passionate opinions, and we love to explore them. So I found a funny thing in an article. What does GT mean? If you had to guess, no, Greasy Tailpipe is wrong. What it means is Gran Turismo, or Gran Touring. The term Gran Turismo comes from Italian, and it refers to cars that can make the long distance grand tours in a luxurious manner.
Yeah, that's right. And when we say long distance, we're talking about cars that supposedly should have the ability to cross entire continents at top speed.
Yeah.
You know, at a good clip, you know, at a high rate of speed, and to do so, and this is the most important part probably, I think, in this whole thing, because there's sports cars that will do that, right?
Yeah.
The most important part of this is that it can do it at speed, but it can also do it in comfort and provide, you know, like the thrills that the driver wants when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But the focus in GT cars is that it's not only powerful, it's not only big, it's not only comfortable. The handling is really great.
Mm-hmm.
There's room for luggage. There's room for people. You know, you're not crowded in. These are the big cars that we don't necessarily think of as GT cars, because it seems like a lot of manufacturers like to slap a GT badge on any kind
anything.
Of sports, on any kind of sports car or any other car that
yeah.
they have, and say this is our GT model. And you know, it's got a little better performance, and we're going to call it a GT model, but it's not necessarily a true Grand Touring car. And and that's where the history bit comes in. And
yeah.
Mike, I'm really glad that you mentioned this, because this is a debate that's gone on a long, long time.
Right. Yeah. And Scott, when you said they'll slap a GT badge on anything, I was thinking the same thing as we were prepping for this podcast. And I can't help but imagine a world where there's a Honda Odyssey GT.
Yeah, there might be. You know, that's the thing. I mean, they're a little bit more careful with it than that. I mean,
right.
they may throw it on a, you know, put it on a Mustang, and that's debatable. And that's actually, as we'll find out, that's one of the cars that is truly considered a grand touring car.
But right.
I've got a whole list that I want to cover later.
Yeah.
And I also want to talk about road racing. Some of the road racing cars and the difference between touring cars and sports cars, and we're going to talk a little bit about NASCAR.
Yep.
We want to throw a lot of different things in here, and I think maybe the first thing we need to do, Ben, is we need to go back to some words by an author whose name is Sam Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Dawson wrote a book that was called The World's Best GT Cars, 1953 to 1973. And he gave us an idea or an outline of what the characteristics of a true GT car should be.
Mm-hmm.
And there's maybe like 4 or 5 or 6 points here that I think we really need to make. And do you want to just kind of go down the list with me and we'll talk about that? Because there's some quotes here that I think really are directly the point of what we're talking about today.
Yes, and you've provided these quotes as much as I wish I had found these, because these are great. These are gold, Scott. All right. This is one that we've already touched on. The ideal is of a car with the ability to cross a continent at speed and in comfort, yet provide driving thrills when demanded.
Okay, and then the second one is ideally the GT car should have been devised by its progenitors as a grand tourer with all the associated considerations in mind. So all descendant cars prior to this one should have had the idea that everything kind of leads up to the grand touring vehicle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And third point, it should be able to transport at least 2 in comfort with their luggage and have room to spare, probably in the form of a 2+2 seating arrangement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's got ample seating, right?
Yeah, it's got room.
Yeah, lots of room. And the comfort, again, comes back in. And the whole luggage thing, there's got to be room to spare. You can't be crammed in with your luggage. You can't be in an uncomfortable situation. Grand touring cars are all about comfort, luxury, speed, performance, all of this is all wrapped in one. But so often we'll find in sports cars that the luxury component of that or the comfort component of that goes right out the window.
Yeah.
You know, they sacrifice those things, the comfort and luxury for performance in a lot of cases.
And this is a best of both worlds mm-hmm. thing.
And the engines. Now the engines, that's a big part here. These should be able to cope with the cruising comfortably at the upper limits on all roads without drawbacks or loss of usable power. So these are big, powerful engines. A lot of times these are big V8 engines, mm-hmm. V10 engines, even stronger.
Yeah.
Long, long front end cars, you know, rear wheel drive a lot of times, front engine cars mainly, although we'll find that some have mid engine or rear engine.
Right.
Mid engines are usually sports cars, but, we'll talk about the nomenclature that goes with that later as well.
Good. And this next one, I want to point out might sound a little bit fluffy to people, mm-hmm. but it is important and it's a good distinction. Here it is. The design, both inside and out, should be geared toward complete control by the driver. Now, at the surface, that might sound a little silly because every driver is supposed to be able to control their car, right?
I guess so.
But they're talking about something a little bit different. They're talking about going back to the point of the demands the driver can make of a GT car. This car could be a slow, a slow, luxurious roll through the mountainside. But then, depending on what the driver wants to do, then it can morph into a beast, you know, and hit some hairpin curves.
Well, like I said, a spirited driver, you know, through the rest of the time, when needed. That's the thing. You gotta add that little asterisk and say, when needed, this has to be able to be almost like a sports car, luxury performance car, something like that. I mean, we're making up different brand or different marks, I guess. But luxury performance, luxury. I don't know. There's a whole different group that we should talk about.
But, that's true.
All right. So the last one is chassis and suspension, and those should provide suitable handling and road handling on all routes during travels. Now that's kind of what we've been talking about already. That the chassis and suspension should be somewhat softer than a traditional sports car would be, because sports cars are typically very hard. They're very, very crisp handling.
You can feel the road.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a little less road feel in a GT car, but, you still get the idea of the sensation of the road, but not quite as you would in an all out sports car.
Right. And, if we could talk just for a little bit about history.
Sure.
Okay. Just for a note to put this in context. The original GT cars come to us in the early 20th century. So this is actually a fairly old tradition in the automotive world. Some of the original manufacturers were high-end guys like Alfa Romeo, Lancia, Ferrari. As soon as Gran Turismo cars came out, they got super popular in North America and in Europe.
Yeah, that's right. Because people realize that, you know, this kind of is the best of both worlds, right? I mean, it allows me the ability to cross the continent if I want to, or to make, even if it's just a couple hours, you're driving a couple hours and up into the mountains to a chalet or whatever you're going to do, you know, skiing, whatever.
Yeah.
And then let's say on the way back, you want to stop off at the Nürburgring and do a lap there. Then you could do that as well, right? Now, that's a crazy example, but I mean, you could do that in a GT car.
You really could do that in a GT car, and I don't think that's a crazy example. I think it's a perfect example of why someone would want a GT car.
And what a great weekend that would be.
And what an amazing weekend. And also, if we consider when these came out, I'm getting a lot of this from this great article, What Does GT Mean? One of the interesting points that the author makes here is that up to the dawn of the automotive age, travel was a lot more difficult. People might not travel for just leisure or adventure. But now the GT car came at a perfect time where if you could afford the car, because they were never cheap, if you could afford one, then you could just hop in one day and say, you know what? I've never been to Poughkeepsie.
quite a distance away, right? I mean,
you could travel
a long
leisure.
Distance, but you wouldn't be completely exhausted when you got there because, in a car that, you know, is punishing to the occupants. And I'll be honest, I've had some cars that are punishing to drive. They really are. I mean, it takes its toll on your body after, you know, a couple of hours behind the wheel.
Yeah.
they're fun to drive. Sure, they're sports cars. They're you know, small, you know, two seat type roadsters or whatever. You know,
but they're work to drive.
Yeah, they are. But they're great fun for short bits of time. But you're not going to do any kind of endurance driving in them. And this is what these are all about. And mm-hmm. and these are the types of cars that we will see in endurance racing. And we'll talk about racing as well. But you know, I want to mention just a few examples of grand touring cars. And there's a long list. You can find a list just about anywhere of GT, you know, GT touring cars. That's redundant, I guess. Grand touring cars. But you know, you'll find a lot of the list is something that you would say, oh yeah, I kind of could agree with that. You know, like the Aston Martin cars around here, like the big Vanquish models, the DBS.
That makes sense.
Bentley Continental GT Speed models and the Brooklands and, I guess some Maseratis even. You know, even though those are more performance oriented, but look at some of the new coupes that are coming out. Those are definitely grand touring cars.
Yeah, good call.
But then there's some surprises on here as well. Like, you know, they list the Dodge Challenger as a GT car. Now, from 1970 to 1974 and then the 2008 to present version, is listed as a GT car. I understand, you know, that it's a good big car. You know, it's got a powerful engine. It's good for, you know, driving long distances.
Yeah.
It can also be a spirited driver if you get the SRT version.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I hesitate to put that in a GT car category, I guess.
Does it have that luxurious kind of aspect? I think that might be what's missing.
Well, you know, the other thing is, like, look at the list, and it says Hyundai Genesis Coupe. Now, I understand, you know, the big four-door version, the big sedan that they have,
yeah,
the Hyundai
yeah.
Genesis. That's a very comfortable big vehicle that, you know, you could tour long distances in. But the Hyundai Genesis Coupe, I mean, it's a smaller car. It seems more like a sports car to me. Ford Mustang also makes the list, which, I mean, it's had the GT label on it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't see it as a long distance, comfortable, luxury type vehicle.
And let's also make a point here that's super important. The term, and I'm getting one of these notes from you, Scott, the GT abbreviation,
mm-hmm.
You yourself call it one of the most misused and abused terms in motoring.
Well, that's not my own words, but yeah, it is definitely misused. I mean, it's often, like I said, I mean, at the beginning of this, that it's often slapped on the back end of the car just to give it some performance aspect, I guess, or appeal, maybe that's
right.
The way to say it. You know, that it has just a bit of an edge on the other versions of the car, like the, I'm going to make something up, the L version or the LX version, and they
yeah.
put the GT version out there with just a little more horsepower, a little more torque.
Sure.
Give it a manual transmission, and then they call it a GT, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily following exactly what we're talking about with the standard definition or the true GT automobiles.
Exactly.
From the past. But, you know, the term or the variations of GT, there's so many different examples of this. I mean, there's the GT, there's GTO, GTS,
sure.
GTB, GTI,
GTX,
yep, GTA, there's GTAM. Yeah, GTC, I mean, you can go down the list. I mean, GTR for the, you know, the new Nissan.
Right.
I mean, there's examples of all these. And of course, you know, they fit into it for the category for the manufacturer. You know, the manufacturer thought, well, this is a car we're going to put our GT label on. It's going to be, you know, one of these variations of it.
Yeah.
But, it is often misused or misrepresented. And I don't mean to be a stickler about it because I'm not a purist. I'm not one to say, you know, that you can't call that car a GT car. That's not a true grand tour from, you know, the past. It doesn't fit the definition from the 1920s.
Right.
But I do say that, you know, I mean, if you're going to have just an example, I mean, like a Nissan Leaf GT, you know, if it ever comes out or something like that, you know, I would have to argue with something like that, you know, or, you know, some of these compact or subcompact cars that use the GT label. Like, remember the Escort GT?
Yeah.
That wasn't a luxury touring car of any kind, but they put the GT label on it. So, you know, they have their own, manufacturers have their own way of designating what they want to put the GT label on.
I think it's fair to say they have their own somewhere between rationale and rationalization for it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about that Honda Odyssey GT. Scott, before we move on further, I have to check something with you.
What's that?
And with that, we return to GT. Now, we just left off talking about all the various spins on the GT idea that people have. I'm going to call them spins, like GTR, GTA.
Yeah, sure. The abbreviations, the characteristics of the brand, or not the brand, but of the make, I guess. And we've talked about, you know, some examples of grand touring cars.
Right.
Now, I want to talk about maybe just briefly, if you don't mind.
Sure.
the difference or the differentiation between touring car and sports car, because you know, when you get into racing, you get into the way people decide to label these things.
Uh-huh.
There's very, very little. Turns out there's very, very little difference between a touring car and a sports car, and in most cases, what it happens to be is just the way that it's, you know, the nomenclature, the way that it's named or the way that it's traditionally been used, I guess.
So, right, the precedent.
Yeah, exactly. So if the series was started as Grand Touring Series, you know, with race cars, then they're going to continue to call the cars that compete in that series, that group, Grand Touring Cars. Mm-hmm. Now, if it started as sports cars, they're going to continue to call those cars the same thing. But there's a lot of overlap between the cars that run in both of those different race series. And it just comes down to, I guess, the tradition of the two separate groups and what they typically have used in the past and what mm-hmm. they continue to use today.
Well, there's one really interesting point here because the FIA classifies GT car, quote unquote, mm-hmm. in a very open way, a very open definition. You ready?
Sure.
An open or closed automobile which has no more than one door on each side and a minimum of two seats situated one on each side of the longitudinal center line of the car. These two seats must be crossed by the same traversal plane. This car must be used legally on the open road and adapted for racing on circuits or closed courses.
Oh, so it can be adapted for racing.
Yeah.
It's a coupe. So
yeah.
It's a two-door coupe,
and
right?
They spend so much time in the definition of where the seats are.
With two seats, I mean, or, you know, two seats or a 2+2, as we mentioned, you know.
Yeah.
And 2+2, just so if anybody doesn't know what that is, it's usually two in the front, and then, of course, in the back there's two, but there's like, it's kind of like room for two kids, maybe. Like
yeah.
Two small adults, maybe, would be the way to say
it
that.
It would have to be tiny.
A lot of times you'll see that in sports cars, you know, where they have the back seat, and you look in the back seat, and you realize, like, well, that's not much of a back seat.
Yeah.
You know, the seats are exactly right up against the back end, you know, the cushions.
Yeah, it's
in
more
the
like a nook.
Yeah, that's right, a nook for the kids. That's a
yeah,
good way to say it.
But the reason that I read out that whole definition mm-hmm. is just to dovetail onto your point, which is, that there is so much overlap, because if you read that definition and you listen to it again, it could totally be a sports car.
It could be. It could be. Now, the other thing is that you got to remember that touring cars are traditionally based on family cars, and this can be a hatchback. It could be a sedan. It could be an estate. That's the traditional way that these things have been done. Now,
yeah.
Hatchbacks are kind of new, I guess, but sedans and estates. So, you know, when you think of sedans, that's four-door.
Yeah.
Estates, those are four doors because we're talking about wagons. Really, it's a wagon car.
That's
so
true.
These are great big cars. But GT racing cars, now they're like a powerful, extension, I guess, of that. You know, like, let's say that you have a brand that makes a vehicle that is a sedan or an estate wagon or whatever.
Okay.
And they have, you know, they can make a GT car. That's fine. They can modify something to work that way. But, a lot of times sports cars like Ferrari or Lamborghini or something like that, they're also considered GT cars. And, you know, they're not necessarily a luxury car. I guess they are in that, you know, they cost $400,000 or whatever they cost and they have luxury appointments, but they're not necessarily like the big comfy, plush,
sure.
Bentley type vehicles. You know, they have a different ride. They're completely different animals, really. But they're still considered GT cars. So, you know, there's this really gray area, I guess, where, you know, there's all this crossover between what's allowed in GT classes. And I think, you know, I've got two things that I kind of need to talk about here before we wrap up. And I do want to talk about, Grand Am Road Racing, which is GT racing really here in the U.S. and Canada.
Ooh.
And then I also want to mention, NASCAR. And I think I want to do that first because this is just really a short blurb maybe. And I don't know how much more you have on GT cars, Ben, but I don't want to cut you off here.
Oh, I'm all ears with NASCAR.
All right. So NASCAR, a lot of people will say, well, you know, why aren't NASCAR cars GT cars?
Oh, I'll do it. Hey, okay. Scott, why aren't NASCAR cars GT cars?
That's a fantastic question, Ben, and I'm really, really glad you asked that. And I don't, it's like you read my mind, but NASCAR cars of today are not GT cars. Now, I'm not saying that NASCAR cars of the past were, but they were closer to GT cars because,
yeah.
They're not truly derived from production cars. You gotta remember that NASCAR cars today are kind of a shell that looks like a certain type of vehicle that's put on top of a body that, you know, is a shared or custom design that NASCAR and the manufacturer had developed.
Yeah.
It's not the production car that we think of when we think of stock car racing of the past. And now, even in the past, here's the other complication, Ben. You know, all these little asterisks that we have to add to this definition. I guess touring cars traditionally or exclusively used to race on road courses and street circuits. And this is, you know, a historical definition of these things, right? So American, you know, NASCAR cars typically or predominantly run on high-speed ovals or some variation of that.
Yeah.
And there's very few times when they run on road courses. They do, but again, they're not the derivative exactly of the production version of that car. They look similar.
Right.
They carry the badging.
As you said, that's a shell.
It's pretty much, I mean, it's definitely a shell at this point because it's a NASCAR developed chassis, engine design, and all that stuff. It really isn't a production based derivative the way it used to be in the past in, let's say, the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Which makes them not GT cars.
Okay. So that's how they handle NASCAR. And they decide that, you know, it's definitely not a GT series. Okay.
Yeah. But what about Grand Am?
Now, Grand Am definitely is a GT series. Or they have GT classes, I guess. And, it's kind of an old class, I guess, in, as far as sports car racing goes. It's both national, international in competition. Historically, you know, these have been production based cars or street cars that have been modified for the track. And, you know, I struggled with this a little bit because it doesn't seem, again, like these are true GT cars, but, you know, they're modified, they're adapted in a way that they're equalized, and the equalization is a big part of Grand Am racing because you've got so many different types of cars racing in different series. Now, the GT Rolex series, which are unibody production cars or sometimes they're custom tube-frame chassis cars, which, again, there's a big difference, right?
Yes.
Well, huge difference, but they do have these equalization methods that they use, which deal with vehicle weight, tire size, and engine RPM limits. But otherwise, you know, you're looking at pretty much a stock, and I say stock in, you know, finger quotes.
Right.
Let's say an Audi 5-liter V10 or it's a BMW or it's a, you know, Ferrari of some kind or a Mazda 3. They all race together in the same class and they do that via, like I said, you know, the vehicle weight, the tire size, the engine RPM limits, and they all run different engines and they're all the different weights and heights and, you know, they've got all these different variations, but they run in the same GT classes. And endurance races, and they all have, you know, a ballpark figure horsepower of like 390 to 450, something like that for the series. It allows them to have all these different variations on the track at the same time running competitively against one another. But just for example, I mean, the Audi 5-liter V10, that runs against the 5-liter BMW, which runs against the 5-liter Ford engine, and which runs against the 6-liter GM pushrod engine.
Oh.
And, you know, Mazda has a rotary engine. So, you know, it's strange. Porsche has a flat six, but they're all in the same class because of the way they equalize the series.
See, okay, this is what I have to ask you, because I'm really glad you brought this up. Just in your opinion, we're not going to hold you to this, not me, not the listeners, just in your opinion, Scott, do you think this equalization works? Does it make a level playing field?
I absolutely do.
You
do? Now, I know that there's body differences in these things, but they do run very similar times, you know, time lapse. They're very competitive. If one series or one group rather of cars, one make or manufacturer of cars was completely running away with things,
they'd change it.
They would adapt it in some way to make it a more level playing field. And that's what makes the series interesting is that, you know, over 24 hours, there can be quite a bit of distance between, you know, the first place car and the, you know, second, third, fourth place car. Sometimes, but see, now we're seeing a lot of races, these even 24 hour races, 12 hour races. You know, I've got examples of all these different races and series where cars, you know, in the same class, different makes, models, dramatically different bodies, are running very, very competitive and very, very close at the end of 12 and even 24 hours of racing. So that shows me that it's very, very level.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you said that. Not everybody agrees with you.
I don't think so. I mean, and there's also cases where some run away, you know, and then, you know, of course something is, you know, there's always some kind of new development that leads to that. Like, you know, Audi comes out with some new technology that allows it to be, you know, seven laps ahead of everybody else at the end of the 24 hours. And then next year, you know, someone will catch up and then it's like this cat and mouse, this back and forth.
Well, yeah. And it drives such innovation. Mm-hmm. Still reminds me of one of my favorite podcasts that we've done. Not one of our best, just one of my favorites, which was, you know, innovations that come from racing.
Sure, that was probably a very old podcast.
It is a very old podcast.
But the idea holds true in that, you know, that it creates this incredible competitive spirit between the drivers and the manufacturers and the guys in the shop that are tuning these things.
Yeah.
It's just, it makes it that much more exciting to watch as well.
All right. The last question on GT before we go to listener mail.
Okay. I hope we haven't confused a lot of people.
No. Hopefully we've broken it down.
Maybe. It's still kind of gray for us.
So here's the question. What's your favorite GT car?
Oh, my gosh, Ben. Wow, my favorite GT car?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with one of the great big touring-type cars. I'm going to say, like, I'll just look at my list here because there's a couple of, like, the Bentley cars. I do like the Continental GT Speed. The Brooklands is nice as well. I think I like the big... And I'm surprised Rolls-Royce isn't on here as well. You'd think that they would be, but I think Bentley has more of a performance edge than Rolls-Royce does. It's strictly luxury.
Rolls-Royce is way more on the luxury
side. Even though they're incredibly powerful engines. But,
right.
I'm gonna say, you know, in any of the Bentley cars, and maybe, boy, I'm giving you two answers. I'm gonna say,
go for it.
The Aston Martin. Maybe the Aston Martin Vanquish. It's one of my favorites. Did I pick yours?
No, well, definitely I'm in the Aston Martin side of it too.
Sure.
I don't understand how, anyone could dislike those cars. Maybe someone will write in and let me know, if you have beef with Aston Martin, I'll hear you out, but you better have a good explanation.
So what's your favorite, Ben? Do you have a favorite?
I gotta tell you, man, DB9 might be it.
Really? Okay, so another Aston Martin pick.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'd take any of the Aston Martins.
Yeah, I'm gonna say though, like, let's just say that you're touring across Europe.
Okay.
All the way across Europe. I mean, completely across the country.
Yeah.
And you decide, you know, I'm gonna make this a fast trip. I'm gonna go end to end as fast as I can. But, you know, I wanna be in, you know, touring in luxury.
Right.
I think the Bentley is maybe the choice.
Yeah, the Bentley is more of a traditional GT,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And we've got some there's this kind of balance, even though GT cars are supposed to have both the luxury and the performance. If we look at it objectively, then it's more of a ratio. There's a ratio between these. So
mm-hmm.
Bentley hits it pretty well, but then there are other things like the Dodge Challenger would be a little more performance, a little less luxury. In that ratio.
Okay.
So I think there's some variance there.
Yeah, I guess. And you said it, I guess the Aston Martin that you mentioned, it tips the scale a little bit more towards performance versus luxury.
Yeah.
And as far as, quiet, you know, the interior quiet.
Oh,
comfort.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah, because I mean, in the Bentley, I mean, you can hear a pin drop in the Bentley, you know, when you're driving 100 miles an hour.
It's like that Sprint commercial.
But in an Aston Martin, I mean, I'm hoping in an Aston Martin, because I don't know, but if you're at 100 miles an hour, hopefully you can hear that beautiful engine, you know, the beautiful engine note, I guess.
Oh, sure. Growling like a tiger.
And the exhaust. Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to hear in there. You're not going to have the radio on.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully there's a little bit of variation in there. A lot of difference in a lot of these cars on this list. And I mean, Ferrari or something like that, or, you know, the difference between that and let's see what else is on the list here. Some Nissans, some big Mercedes cars, which I'm sure, you know, quiet comfort as well. Those seem to be the cars that I would pick, the big quiet comfort ride type vehicles for a favorite GT.
Yes. And which one would you pick, listeners? Why don't you write in and tell us? But before you do, stay tuned for this piece of listener mail. Scott, this is a recent one. You know, sometimes you and I get backlogged on our listener mail.
Oh, yes, we do.
So I'm starting to work from the most recent back, but Reza B writes into us, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, R-E-Z-A. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think that's right.
That's okay. Says, I just listened to your Nuts and Bolts podcast and was inspired to write in myself. I have a suggestion for a podcast. In-house tuning companies like AMG for Mercedes-Benz, Nismo for Nissan, and Abarth for Fiat. You could also do a podcast regarding aftermarket tuning like Hennessy and Roush.
You know what's funny, Ben?
What's that?
I gave you a list probably about 2 months ago, I think,
yeah.
With some ideas on it. And I think we had talked about some in-house tuning places. And we talked about BMW M cars, which mm-hmm. is one that we've already done. We talked about SRT for the Dodge line. You know, they used to be a division of Dodge, but now they're on their own, I think. And we talked about, Ruff
for
Porsche.
About
we talked about Roush for Mustang.
Yeah.
We talked about a lot of different things, you know, doing a lot of different things here. So, Reza, you're reading our mind. We've got a list. That's already kind of cooking, and we've done one or two off of these already, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least we've, you know, touched on them at least.
We're sniping on the list. Yeah, we're cherry picking.
We kind of are, but that's a fantastic idea, Reza, and we're going to go with some of those ideas, I promise.
Yeah, and thanks so much for tuning into the show. Listeners, do you have a take on GT cars? Because we'd like to hear it. What's your favorite, least favorite? Tell us more. You can find us at CarStuffHSW on both Facebook and Twitter. Oh, hey, we have a website called CarStuffShow.com where you can see our ugly mugs all over the internet. And some beautiful cars as well.
Well, our podcasts are there.
Yeah.
You can get to the Facebook page from there, our Twitter feed.
You can get videos. You got a blog.
Some videos, a blog. Yeah, we've got a lot of information there. It's a good site.
And you can always send us an email directly. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.